This is a study by Elder Haskell, 1893, The Study of the Bible, number 3, Elder Haskell, January 30, at 10 a.m., gave his third lesson on the study of the Bible. He said that it was his desire to show the importance of the Bible so that we can see it as God looks upon it and as he would have us look upon it. Then we will understand it. The gospel comprehends the entire Bible, and all the divine revelation we have is the gospel. No matter how it is revealed, it is Christ in us, the hope of glory. The gospel was in Christ before the world was. Sin has made a development of the plan known. To reject or neglect any portion of the Bible is to neglect Christ and the gospel of Christ. God knew every individual case just as it is today in the plan of the gospel. This involves what we call foreordination, but it is not foreordination to God. It is foreordination to us. To God, all time is present. There is no present or future knowledge with him. This is incomprehensible to us. We must grasp it by faith. Then we could understand the divine truths. We may learn a theory of Christ. We should learn his divinity. The devil does not know our thoughts. We should be thankful for this, and if a bad thought should arise in our minds, we should never utter it. Christ knows anything and everything about us. Elder Haskell then read the following from testimony number 33, beginning on page 155. Quote, "Keep ever before you this truth. Wherever I am, whatever I do, thou God seest me. It is not possible for the least item of our conduct to escape the observation of the one who says, I know thy works. The depths of every heart are open to the inspection of God. Every action, every purpose, every word is as distinctly marked as though they were only one individual in the whole universe, and all the watchfulness and scrutiny of God were employed on his deportment. Shall we then break even one precept of his law and teach others to do so by evasions, by assertions, by falsehoods, in the very sight of the lawgiver? Shall we brave the sentence in the very face of the judge? In this there is a hardihood which seems to surpass the worst human presumption." Close quote. "Yes, the Lord sees everything in me, as though I was the only person in all the world. And he watches everyone just the same. We cannot understand it, but God tells us that we may believe it. He wants to have us believe something. We should accept it because it is divine truth. When we fully believe, we are given another nature. Our soul and heart are changed. Nothing but divinity can change the heart." Elder Haskell then read the following extract from Gospel Workers, page 130, quote, "It is impossible for any mind to comprehend all the riches and greatness of even one promise of God. One catches the glory of one point of view, another the beauty and grace from another point, and the soul is filled with the heavenly light. If we saw all the glory, the spirit would faint. But we can hear far greater revelations from God's abundant promises than we now enjoy. It makes my heart sad to think how we lose sight of the fullness of blessing designed for us. We contend ourselves with momentary flashes of spiritual illumination when we might walk day after day in the light of his presence. Close quote. My idea is that we should read the Bible by course, and it is a good plan when possible for several to read it together. When we ceased to study the Bible by course and study only by subject, we shall have a dry theory. Studying by subject is largely for theory. When we study the Bible simply by subject, we secure a theory to give to someone else, and that is all we have to give. But when we read the Bible as the voice of God addressed to us, it opens our understanding, and he unfolds himself to us. Then we have something of our own that we can give to another. The stream can rise no higher than the fountain that supplies it. Elder Haskell read again from Gospel Workers, page 135, quote, "There are deep mysteries in the Word of God which will never be discovered by minds that are unaided by the Spirit of God. There are also unsearchable mysteries in the plan of redemption which finite minds cannot comprehend." Close quote. And again, on page 137, quote, "The gospel is a revelation to man of beams of light and hope from the eternal world. All the light does not burst upon us at once, but it comes as we can bear it. Inquiring minds that hunger for a knowledge of God's will are never satisfied. The deeper they search, the more they realize their ignorance and deplore their blindness. It is beyond the power of man to conceive the high and noble attainments that are within his reach, if he will combine human effort with the grace of God, who is the source of all wisdom and power. And there is an eternal weight of glory beyond. Eye hath not seen, nor ear, neither hath it entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him." Close quote. Elder Askell then read the following on page 141, quote, "The word and will of God are expressed in the scriptures by inspired penmen. We should bind them as frontlets between our eyes and walk according to their precepts. Then we shall walk safely. Every chapter and every verse is a communication from God to man. In studying the Word, the soul that hungers and thirsts for righteousness will be impressed by the divine utterances. Skepticism can have no power over a soul that with humility searches the Scriptures." Close quote. Elder Haskell also read the following from Testimony number 32, page 22, quote, "The great day of the Lord is near. It is near and hasteneth greatly. Jesus says, 'Lo, I come quickly.' We should keep these words ever in mind and act as though we do indeed believe that the coming of the Lord is nigh and that we are pilgrims and strangers on the earth. The vital energies of the Church of God must be brought into active exercise for the object of self-renovation. Every member must be an active agent for God, for through him we both have access by one Spirit unto the Father. Now, therefore, ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building, fitly framed together, groweth unto a holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for a habitation of God through the Spirit. This is a particular work which must be carried forward in all harmony, in the unity of the Spirit, and in the bonds of peace. No place should be given to criticisms, doubts, and unbelief." Close quote. The study of the Bible, these truths we get from it, is the beginning of an education that will never end. The more interest we take in the study of these things here, the better prepared we will be to enter the same study in the future. Again, Elder Haskell read from Testimony, number 32, page 57. Quote, Jesus is waiting with longing desire to open before his people the glory that will attend his second advent and to carry them forward to a contemplation of the landscape of bliss. There are wonders to be revealed. A long lifetime of prayer and research will leave much unexplored and unexplained. But what we know not now will be revealed hereafter. The work of instruction begun here will be carried on to all eternity. The Lamb, as he leads the hosts of the redeemed to the fountain of living waters, will impart rich stores of knowledge. He will unravel mysteries in the works and providence of God that have never before been understood. Close quote. How long then will we be getting our education? To all eternity. Christ will be unfolding these mysteries to us forever. All the mysterious providences of our lives that have seemed to us so dark and inexplicable will then be explained. In the Gospels to be found every scientific subject, everything to make us wise and to build up our characters. It is all in that book. My confidence in the book is increasing every day. It is full of information upon all kinds of subjects. It was written by men of all avocations, by philosophers and by ignorant men, by learned and illiterate men, by farmers, by fishermen. God lifted the curtain and revealed to these men of different capacities the truths of his word. It was written by all classes that it might be a benefit to all. They each illustrated the truth by things with which they were familiar, but they are the words of God just the same. If we read the Bible with this thought in our minds, we shall be surprised to see how much instruction we shall find in it upon a variety of subjects. There is information about farming. The wealthy but selfish farmers tear down his barns and builds larger, that he may have room to save to himself all his plentiful harvest. The sower goes forth to sow the seed, with varying results of good and ill success. The vine dresser carefully prunes his vine that it may bring forth much fruit, etc. The Bible has much in it about agriculture. It is full of wisdom of every kind. Colossians 2, verses 2 and 3. How much wisdom and knowledge is it to you, to me? We must decide this question for ourselves. Let us go back to the beginning and read Genesis 2, verse 5. Quote, And every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. Close quote, etc. All these things were in the mind of Christ even before they grew. He knew every plant of the field and every herb before it grew out of the earth. There was nothing in the earth to make anything grow until God spake and made them grow. It was the power of God that made them grow, the same power that makes them grow now. God gave everything power to reproduce its kind, and man was to have dominion over all. Then God made the garden in which he placed the man he had formed. In that garden was every tree that was pleasant to the sight and good for food, an example of what the earth should be under the subduing influence of man. God created man in his own image, which is not simply the form of God, but of the nature of God in intelligence. And he said to man, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it. He had given the man a sample of what he wanted the whole earth to be and expected him to make it so. Then God must have given him a knowledge of the nature of trees. the nature of plants and their properties and the art of cultivating them. If Adam did not have the knowledge, then God, in commanding him to make the earth like Eden, was telling him to do what he could not do. This would have been as inconsistent as it would be to take a man from the city who had never seen a farm and place him upon a large tract of wild but protective land and expect him to make out of it a landscape garden. Adam was indeed a landscape gardener in the highest sense of the word. How much intelligence, then, did Adam need to rule over all the earth and bring it into such a perfect condition? He knew enough on the first day of his existence to name all the beasts, fowls, and every living creature. As primitive names are always an expression of the nature, appearance, or habits of the thing named, Adam must have known of the nature of everything he named. He understood about the trees and shrubs. That is what we call botany. He knew all about the beasts. That is, he was a zoologist. As he would subdue the earth, his knowledge of what it contained, of its fruits, flowers, and minerals, would have increased by his experience. God made Adam perfect physically and mentally. He was little inferior to the angels of God. Hebrews 2, verse 7. He was a specimen of the kind of men that God makes. Now, what is the object of the gospel? It is to restore us to the condition of the original man. The object of the gospel is twofold: to keep men from sinning and to restore and bring them back to their original state of purity, to the likeness of the infinite God. Sin took away the knowledge Adam had, and we have been on the downgrade ever since. The object of the third angel's message is to take us back again. The problem is being worked out to settle the question for the inhabitants of the unfallen worlds. Our relations to the truth and to Christ have an effect upon other worlds, Colossians 1, verse 18. Christ is preeminent in all things everywhere. He is teaching the universe, and he wants us here to learn more of him. If anyone does not like to take the Bible and read it through, they need converting. When I hunger for righteousness for myself, to know what God will say to me, but not my choice, then God will give me all I need. Every day I should be learning something of God. Elder Haskell then closed by reading from Patriarchs and Prophets, pages 49 and 50. Quote, God made man upright. He gave him noble traits of character, with no bias toward evil. He endowed him with high intellectual powers and presented before him the strongest possible inducement to be true to his allegiance. Obedience, perfect and perpetual, was the condition of eternal happiness. On this condition he was to have access to the tree of life. The home of our first parents was to be a pattern for other homes as their children should go forth to occupy the earth. That home, beautified by the hand of God himself, was not a gorgeous palace. Men in their pride delight in magnificent and costly edifices and glory in the works of their own hands, but God placed Adam in a garden. This was his dwelling. The blue heavens were its dome, the earth with its delicate flowers and carpet of living green was its floor, and the leafy branches of the goodly trees were its canopy. Its walls were hung with the most magnificent adornings, the handiwork of the great master artist. In the surroundings of the pair was a lesson for all time, that true happiness is found not in the indulgence of pride and luxury, but in the communion with God through his created works. If men would give less attention to the artificial and cultivate greater simplicity, they would come far nearer to answering the purpose of God in their creation. Pride and ambition are never satisfied, but those who are truly wise will find substantial and elevating pleasure in the sources of enjoyment that God has placed within the reach of all. While they remain true to God, Adam and his companion were to bear rule over the earth. Unlimited control was given them over every living thing. The lion and the lamb sported peacefully around them to lay down together at their feet. The happy birds flighted about them without fear, and as their glad songs ascended to the praise of their Creator, Adam and Eve united with them in thanksgiving to the Father and the Son. The holy pair were not only children under the fatherly care of God, but students receiving instruction from an all-wise Creator. They were visited by angels and were granted communion with their Maker with no obscuring veil between. They were full of the vigor imparted by the Tree of Life, and their intellectual power was but little less than that of the angels. The mysteries of the visible universe, the wondrous works of Him who is perfect in knowledge, afforded them an exhaustless source of instruction and delight. The laws and operations of nature, which have engaged men's study for 6,000 years, were opened to their minds by the infinite Framer and Upholder of all. They held converse with leaf and flower and tree, gathering from each the secrets of its life. With every living creature, from the mighty Leviathan that playeth among the waters to the insect mote that floats in the sunbeams, Adam was familiar. He had given to each its name, and he was acquainted with the nature and habits of all. God's glory in the heavens, the innumerable worlds in their orderly revolutions, the balancing of the clouds, the mysteries of light and sound of day and night, all were opened to the study of our first parents. On every leaf of the forest or stone of the mountain, in every shining star in earth and air and sky, God's name was written. The order and harmony of creation spoke to them of infinite wisdom and power. They were ever discovering some attraction that filled their hearts with deeper love and called forth fresh expressions of gratitude. Close quote. The end of Helder Haskell's study.